DECD Commissioner Heather Johnson. Governor Mills will be seeking public input for a new economic development plan for the state. It will be the first time Maine has created such a plan in two decades. At the helm of the effort is Department of Economic and Community Development Commissioner Heather Johnson. Johnson's background includes work in both the public and private sectors, and most recently as director of Connect Me, whose mission is to expand broadband in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We'll talk with Commissioner Johnson about broadband and cell service, as well as rural economic development, the aging workforce, taxes, tourism, healthcare, entrepreneurism, and her vision for Maine's future. What are your questions for DECD Commissioner Heather Johnson? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The scope of the Department of Economic and Community Development touches upon the lives of all Mainers. Commissioner Heather Johnson joins me today to talk about how she envisions boosting Maine's economy and what challenges she faces in overseeing everything from taxes to tourism. She has worked in both the private and public realms and previously served as director of the Connect Me Authority, working on broadband connectivity. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about economic development for Commissioner Johnson? Do you have ideas? Are you a business owner? Do you live in a rural area that's looking to revitalize? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Commissioner Johnson, welcome to the Maine Calling studio.
Thank you for having me.
Governor Mills has charged you with heading up an ambitious statewide strategic plan for economic development. Tell us about the overall goals of that plan.
Yeah, so we're really trying to look at a plan that will create opportunity across the whole state. And the goals are about raising wages in all areas, not just some areas. We're trying to find wage growth everywhere. We're also looking at growing the workforce, which includes kind of attracting workforce folks to Maine, as well as really growing the workforce we have, changing some of the underemployment options for folks in Maine. And then the third one is about raising productivity value per worker, which is an equation that grows the GDP.
Okay. I understand you're also starting to gather public input. If one of our listeners is thinking right now, I've got something to say. So how can Maine people take part?
You know, we've been so pleasantly surprised at the amount of input people have wanted to give and ways people have wanted to engage. We had a series of regional meetings, and over 600 people came out to those meetings to provide input. And now we're gathering all that input and trying to synthesize it into some outputs. But if people want to go to our website, they can find kind of the draft of the work as it's happening real time and create comments there. Or certainly they can always email me at heather.johnson@maine.gov.
I want to go back to what you started with by saying you want to increase wages. I've read that the average wage, full-time wage in Maine, is about $40,000 a year. What would be good enough?
You know, we are working on that. I think that's a great question. What is good enough? And I think it's maybe different by area, right? If you break out that average wage by county, you get a very different look at it. Cost of living is different in each of our counties as well. And so we are trying to do some work right now to say what is possible. You know, how do we leverage the assets we have in these counties and create opportunity there?
As you, of all people, well know, Maine is usually ranked at the bottom nationally in terms of our broadband availability. One ranking has Maine at 49th out of 50. The Census Bureau says only 48% of Maine households have high connectivity. How do we address this huge challenge? What do you plan to do?
You know, it's interesting. The connectivity challenge has multiple parts, but I will say the technology piece has gotten very easy, right? Technology is really good. We know what the gold standard from a technology perspective is. There's not a lot of question or debate about that anymore. Then it becomes about other options, like how do you fund it? How do you make sure there's equitable access for people so that everybody can take advantage? And how do you make sure that it's a platform that can create economic growth as well as community development, access to healthcare, potentially access to education, right? It's not just about kind of connectivity for connectivity's sake. There are a lot of components there.
There's been some debate about whether it ought to be considered a utility. Do you believe it's a public utility?
You know, it's certainly an essential service at this point. I think as we think about broadband, it's really hard to think about kind of going, you know, economic stability going forward without being able to connect in a global economy that really doesn't work very well.
Do you believe the federal government ought to have a rural project, something like the rural electrification project of the last century?
You know, I think the federal government certainly can play a helpful role. I think state government can play a helpful role. We're very fortunate in our state that we have a lot of regional providers that are willing to come to the table and play an effective role as well. And then the municipalities play a role. So I think it takes all of us to kind of work together and figure out how and where we move this forward.
Well, connected to this is cell phone service. Speaking at a Bangor Chamber breakfast, you noted that you can't drive from Bangor to Portland without losing a call. Same kind of answers there?
Yeah, this morning on my way down, actually, I lost a call and I called them back and they knew exactly where I was on the highway at that particular moment. So it's a challenge we all face, right, is being able to be connected. And being connected, again, isn't just about economic growth, but it certainly is a component of economic growth. And those challenges are a little bit different. That technology is still emerging in a lot of ways. 4G right now, LTE is kind of the standard. 5G is kind of out in front of us. There's a lot of discussion about is 5G kind of the great solution and where do you start and what do you need to do to wait? I would say, fortunately for us, our broadband connectivity goals really align and support density around fiber. And that moves us into a 5G world, so or a 4G world. So you know we can't miss with that piece.
What's the timeline? What are you looking at?
You know, every day somebody's running fiber. Every day there are more people connected. The state action plan is a 5-year plan from the point of funding. So we're still working through some of that right now. But it's mostly about staging the projects and construction timing once you have the funding.
We're talking with Maine Department of Economic and Community Development Commissioner Heather Johnson. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Commissioner Johnson, Maine's largest sector for employment is healthcare by far. What does that mean for Maine's economic future?
Well, healthcare is just this critical sector, right? If you want to healthcare touches, you know, all of the community development work and all of the economic growth work. So right now for us, healthcare is expanding across the continuum. So we need physicians, we need, you know, daily service providers as well, and everyone in between. I think what that says is we have an aging population. Preventative medicine is more on people's minds, and we want it to continue to be more on people's minds because the healthier we can keep folks in Maine, the better. And then the more productive they become as part of the workforce. So, you know, there's real opportunity in healthcare on a variety of ways as you think about it, to grow an economic sector while you also support the needs of the people. Certainly, there are some challenges, particularly as it relates to rural communities and healthcare. And so back to your connectivity question, you know, we're looking at creative ways. Commissioner Lambrew and Commissioner Fortman and I were looking at some creative ways to think about potential telehealth opportunities, potential regional solutions. So there's growth there. But there's a lot of work to be done still.
Sure. I've read recently that we're not where we had hoped to be when it came to telehealth and coming on the year 2020 in Maine.
I would say that's true nationally. You know, we have some areas of specialization that we could take better advantage of. I was meeting with a business in Piscataquis County not long ago that is a self-insured company, and they've been able to reduce their costs and improve their outcomes by putting a telehealth facility on their site. And so I think, you know, it shows us that that can be successful. It shows us that the private sector can help with some of these solutions. So we continue to we'll continue to work down that path.
Other places, other states are putting an emphasis on building what's called the knowledge economy. You don't hear that much in Maine. Is that happening here, or is it being called something else here?
Yeah, I think we talk about it differently for sure. As we build out this economic plan, we're looking for industries that we see real opportunity for growth in, and then taking another step down to look at the workforce needed to support those industries. And that looks at a whole diverse population of workers. You know, our economy should be something that anyone can look at and see where they plug into. It's not just about one sector or another sector. I think sometimes we get into advanced credentialing, or we get into tradespeople only kind of thinking. And what we're seeing as we build this plan is everyone's important in that work to advance these industry clusters. And so we try to look at it more as a continuum that really creates opportunity for everyone across the spectrum in our economy and lets people plug into it where they want to. Certainly, I think it's important if people want credentialing, we have to create a path for that. If people want to be, you know, want to be employed with a living wage without credentialing, what does that path look like? And how do we add value to credentialing so that as people kind of work their way through that, they can create their own career path in the way they choose? It should be, in our opinion, it should be about their dreams and their wants and us creating an economy that allows them to plug into that.
You use the word cluster. What do you see as Maine? Is there a cluster, an area where Maine has an advantage, where Maine can really build up whether it's part of the knowledge economy or just the broader economy? You know, someone might look at a state like North Carolina and look at its major universities and say, well, they have an advantage there. Does Maine have something equivalent in your view?
We do. And some of this is maybe work that we all kind of know. But as we get through this economic plan, things are really popping out. So as you think about climate change, right, there's a global climate change body of work that a lot of states and a lot of countries are focused on. Maine is particularly well positioned to support some of the elements, some of the solutions there. Right. People are shifting to protein, and the need for protein is doubling. We can create aquaculture systems and infrastructure that innovate off our historic and heritage industries, but would allow us to grow salmon on land and have kind of this opportunity to not have to ship salmon. We import about 95% of our salmon from Europe and South America right now. And so when you're looking at carbon footprints, right, the shipping of it starts to cancel out the value of the growing it. And so, you know, think of that as one. Think of industry diversification around forest products. So we have companies looking at using forest residuals to make biofuels so that it's not petroleum-based, it's wood-based. There's potential for us to make bioplastics out of wood residuals. We have a group looking at insulation and potentially, you know, manufacturing wood-based insulation in Madison. So there are a lot of things like that that are really about, I would call them innovative diversification from heritage industries that give us opportunity. And we're examining all of those.
One approach your department has overseen for years is the whole community block grant program, which towns and communities across Maine have used for infrastructure projects, fixing up downtowns, creating no services. How well has this program been working, and what is their role in the strategic plan going forward?
Yeah, so their role is really about, they have a set of criteria for a block grant, and towns and communities apply for those block grant funds. And the projects, what you'll see, I think, are projects lining up to these forward-looking paths. So this economic plan is really about creating a roadmap for state government, but also it's also trying to stabilize the ground so the private sector can see where are we going, so they know what, you know, where they might want to invest. But it also helps municipalities and local economic development groups also plug into it. And so as they look at their suite of projects that they need funding for, the block grant program is a great place for that.
So it can fit into this strategic initiative. We have an internal debate over how to approach tax relief in Maine. What are you currently looking at in terms of changes to property tax, income tax, corporate tax? what is the thinking right now of your department and the Mills administration? Are we going to be tackling tax reform, and in what way?
So tax reform isn't currently part of the work that we are doing today. That actually sits with Commissioner Figueroa over at the Department of Administration and Financial Services. Our department works on tax increment financing projects. So if municipalities want to look at development, they can assign kind of a baseline status for their for a particular region.
So the pine tree zones.
That's a different project.
Okay.
So we administer the pine tree zone program, what's called the ETIF program, which is a payroll tax program, and municipal TIFs.
And do you foresee any changes in how these are administered?
I do, actually. One of the things we're looking at as we think about these industry clusters that we want to grow and focus on is what does it take to attract those? And what do we already have? What's working? And what isn't working as well as we need it to? And how might we make those changes? You talked earlier about North Carolina and the relationship with the universities. We're incredibly fortunate, right, to have the University of Maine system here, as well as a number of private universities that are trying to work really closely with us to create workforce that is specifically needed, to create programs and curriculum, and also things like the Additive Materials Project at the University of Maine, where they put a public-private collaboration together so students actually work in the private sector long before they graduate, which hopefully creates a connection to them and value to the business. So while that's not a tax program, right, it's part of this overall package that we create to add value to business in the private sector.
We recently did a program on Maine Calling about the workforce shortage, and we're seeing it, you know, especially strong right now this time of year. We're having this conversation in August in the tourism industry. How does one even start to address the workforce shortage today? You know, I think a lot of people feel as though, oh, eventually we'll be okay. People will see what a great place Maine is and move here. But what about today? What about tomorrow?
Yeah, I hope that's true. I hope people do see how great Maine is, and they will come here, right? If they get any exposure to Maine, I think people love it. And we've seen from tourism, people will come back repetitively. So if we get them here once, we think we can capture them. I think today is being a whole lot more creative. Laurie Lachance used to say there's not one solution. There's a whole range of solutions. And this is a perfect example of that. I don't think there's one easy answer. There are a lot of little pieces that will hopefully pile on top of each other. Things like, how do we make it more effective for seniors to stay in the workforce longer? How do we have seniors mentoring students? How do we create apprentice programs and grow apprenticeships that will allow people into the workforce and potentially people to change career paths, right? I know I did, and I think a lot of other people too, you know, like a mid-shift career change. And so there are opportunities out there to revitalize those markets.
All right. Well, we're talking with Economic Development Commissioner Heather Johnson. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx. Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at nhlandlaw.com.
On Tuesday, we'll be here with phones and a tuned-up website to talk to you and other listeners about the importance and need for public support, your support. Let's grow together. It all starts on Tuesday. You'll be asked to call or pledge online. Everyone who already supports this valued service hopes that you will do your part. And many current supporters will take an extra step by increasing their annual or monthly contributions. Community coming together to ensure that something good happens and continues. That's what public radio is all about. You can contribute right now if you'd like at mainepublic.org, and thank you.
Maine Public is a media sponsor of the 2019 Portland Chamber Music Festival, the inaugural season with artistic director Melissa Reardon, August 8th through the 17th at the University of Southern Maine's Hannaford Hall. Maine Public members are eligible for a 15% discount on advance tickets. For more information about the Portland Chamber Music Festival, including the schedule, location, and how to take advantage of the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, Heather Johnson. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Betsy Beeman. She is CEO of Coastal Enterprises, known as CEI. Thanks for joining us, Betsy.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the opportunity to join Maine Calling. And hello, Commissioner Johnson.
Good morning, Betsy.
Well, CEI is focused, as maybe some in our audience don't know, focused on developing jobs in rural parts of the state. What would you like to see the state do in helping in those efforts?
Well, we work with hundreds of small businesses a year, and they tell us that they need access to different types of financing and advice to help with business challenges like managing the financial aspects of their business or accessing new markets. One of the items that you were just talking about earlier that we hear a lot about is how to find and keep new workers, and it's a particular challenge because of the tight labor market in Maine right now. So there are different ways that the state could help with both capital access as well as working with rural communities so that they can expand their capacity to work with small businesses and help them to be more successful.
I understand you have a question for the commissioner about helping rural communities.
Yeah, we really want to cultivate Maine as a place where people can start and grow successful companies and to attract folks from outside of Maine to the state. And I wonder, what is it that you feel the state can do to really make Maine be a place that folks want to come to start and grow businesses that are successful and help create the kinds of jobs that folks in Maine want and need?
Yeah, thanks, Betsy, for the question. In one of my very first meetings with the governor, one of the first things she said to me is, we need to streamline these resources. It's too complicated. And I think she's absolutely right. You know, we have seen a lot of resources available, but if you're a business, it frankly looks like alphabet soup, and coming in new to state government, I had some of the same questions. Who are all these groups? What are these resources? Where do the programs sit? How do they operate? How do you access them? And so one of the things that we're making a real effort at is to try to take some of those barriers out so that a business has kind of one point of entry into all of this work. And it doesn't change the back end work, but it changes the business engagement piece so that the private sector can much more easily get the help that they need. And we met with the business earlier this year, and we estimated we saved about 9 months in the business cycle by collaborating. So somebody actually from Betsy's team was part of that work to create access to these resources for a business all at one point. So they could come in, they could talk about some of their challenges, they could talk about their business model and what they were trying to work on. And then we could very easily around the table say, you know, this group can help with this, this group can help with this, and create that knitted resource network that is so critical, I think, particularly even for rural businesses who may have access to fewer resources.
Betsy, I know that many of the small businesses you work with are very small and entrepreneurs. Would you like to ask a question of the commissioner about entrepreneurship?
Sure. You know, we have we work with entrepreneurs who are in some of our most remote and rural communities, and those, you know, the Rim counties have recovered a lot more slowly than the greater Portland area from the recent recession. I wonder, are there particular things that you're seeing the state can do in our most rural communities to help entrepreneurs be able to be successful there and not have to move to either out of state or to our larger communities?
You know, I think this rural economic growth is so important, and a lot of that growth will come in this entrepreneurial category, right? We're not going to get large businesses necessarily to move and solve the challenges of rural communities. And so what we see a lot of times are people that are from those communities that want to be able to stay there and see a need and create a solution to fill that need. And when we do that, how we help those folks is critical. So group organizations like the Maine Technology Institute is now putting people out into these remote locations. So Brian Whitney recognized that and now has somebody based in Waterville and has people that rotate through some of the RIM communities on a consistent schedule. So those communities and the people that support businesses in those communities know when additional resources will be there and be available. And I think there's a lot of extra look at that as part of this economic plan, because there is a commitment to look at kind of wage growth and ownership throughout the state.
All right. Well, Betsy Beeman, thanks so much for calling in. Betsy Beeman, CEO of Coastal Enterprises, Inc. We'll go to a Facebook comment from Martin from E2 Tech. He says, given the many exciting renewable energy policies, we will be studying current and projected clean tech workforce needs. I'd be interested in the commissioner's impressions of the size of the clean tech workforce now, what growth we can expect, and what resources are out there to support continued growth of this sector. And I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, Commissioner, to sort of define clean tech for us as you answer Martin's question.
Yeah, so clean tech is all about renewable energy, primarily focused on renewable energy. And I would say, you know, what I'm sure E2 Tech is seeing, it, and we've all seen it as we look at it, is there was some stagnation in that workforce development because clean tech wasn't necessarily a priority in our state, as it's pretty quickly shifted to become a priority over the last 6 months. What we're seeing are enrollment in clean tech programs at community colleges, at university systems, at some of our private institutions really climb. Folks focused on environmental policy, focused on, you know, heating and cooling options, things like that. So we're seeing skyrocketing enrollment over the last kind of 3 or 4 months in those types of programs at all levels. So there are micro-credentialing work that happens there. There's community college work that happens, and certainly at the university systems. We're even seeing it at the career and technical centers that are connected to our public education system as well.
A Facebook comment from David. Thank you, Maine Calling, Commissioner Johnson, for addressing this critical area. This is State Senator Dave Woodsum in York County. I have had many individuals throughout the state and several in my district call me about not being able to connect to an internet provider because their house is 1,000 or a few hundred feet from last point of internet line. Some have even offered to pay the cost of extending the line to the house. In these cases, the homeowner could work from home if they had quality internet service. Maine is working to improve the workforce in the state. What can the state do to encourage internet providers to be more flexible and work with the state to improve, I think I've just lost my place, to improve Maine's home-based economy? I realize the federal government oversees most internet providers, but I feel the state needs to find a solution to this continuing problem.
Well, thank you, Senator Woodsum, for the question. You know, we hear a lot of that work. You know, people will say that they can't be connected, and then we dig into it and find out there's actually access near their driveway. It just doesn't come down their driveway. And it's interesting because some of the, you referenced earlier, their electrification acts, some of those had to be put in place to solve that same challenge, because when it becomes private land, then, you know, who invests that money to bring cable there? You know, what we've seen are what they call take rates. So people that are willing to create access and willing to subscribe to broadband services is a key component in the operational model for companies expanding broadband. So as we get, you know, further and further down this path, we're seeing a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more shared kind of responsibility around how do we make sure homes get connected. But it is a complicated, it's only complicated from a funding model. The technology, again, it's very easy to run 1,100 feet of cable. That's not the challenge. It's who's responsible for the maintenance of the cable, who pays for the cable. And that continues to be something that we work through.
Is that something that needs to be addressed legislatively, or can it be addressed without a bill in the legislature?
Well, because it's private property, it's usually, you know, there's a lot of, I think we want to be really respectful to people's homes and people's home ownership and be really careful about how we work that. At the same time, I think we want to make it as easy as we can for people to connect to broadband. So I think that's an ongoing discussion. Most of our work, frankly, is making sure the infrastructure is available.
We have a Facebook comment from Gary. Does the state have any plans to convert state buildings to solar power?
Well, actually, the governor is working on solar panels on the Blaine House. So we know that's out there. The state is looking at the carbon footprint as a whole and really trying to figure out where and how we participate as a state. And that's a key priority. You know, biofuels is an option for some of our buildings as well. Some of our oil boilers could easily convert to biofuels at a very low capital cost. So, you know, we need to balance kind of this upfront capital cost with the climate impacts. And there's a group of people working on that.
All right. We'll go to Marfine calling from Portland. Hi, Marfine. Go ahead.
Hi. Obviously, we all know Maine has some demographic issues and we're trying to attract younger people and younger families to move back. And even though I'm from Portland, I do have my grandmother is an acoustic, so I do care about some rural issues. What is the department doing in terms of planning for ways to connect different areas of the state? Like, I know there's a railway that's, or light rail that's being planned for Portland and Lewiston or being talked about. I think things like that would make it more attractive for millennials to move back to the state.
Yeah, so thank you for your question. We are looking at a number of different things and trying to talk to people just like you, actually, to understand what is it that would make it, you know, now be the right time for people to move back to the state. We're hearing transportation, we're hearing housing, affordable, accessible childcare certainly is on people's radar as they think about moving to Maine and joining our workforce. And then one of the other things that we really want to focus on too is talking about the good economic opportunities that exist. I think a lot of times we tend to fall back into talking about some of our challenges and not looking at where opportunities really lie. And we have a lot of opportunities for people. So we think by combining a broader story around kind of outdoor recreation and public health as a connected component for people who want to have a great, strong work-life balance. You know, can you kayak in the morning and then go to work and then mountain bike home? You know, we're one of the few places that you can do a lot of those things safely and comfortably and allow, you know, people around you to do the same thing. So, we're trying to put together that story so that we tell it effectively and then have a marketing mechanism to do that.
Marfine, thanks so much for calling in today. Let's see. We'll go to a Facebook message from Meg. Meg says, digital communication tends to be line of sight. Those of us who live in rural areas often lose out on cell service and even TV signals if we live behind a hill or a large patch of forest. We can only get one channel here, and cable is not available. What can be done about this issue?
Meg, I think it goes back to kind of this connectivity. Almost all kind of gold standard connectivity, be it TV, be it some of the others, really is about getting fiber density out into our communities. It doesn't have to go all the way to home, but it has to come out into these markets, and we don't have it in a lot of our markets. We don't have a fiber network that would allow for easy access of high speed, and that's what it will take. So it will take, in order to have a cellular connection, right, your cell phone makes a call, that signal goes to a tower somewhere, which gets into your line of sight discussion, but from there, it's got to have fiber to get back to any data point. And so in order for it to work, and that's what limits a lot of our signal is there's not enough fiber to connect these antennas to. So as we continue to expand out into our other markets that aren't covered today with fiber, it will make it much easier for us to create cellular access as well as internet connectivity. It doesn't fix kind of this cable or TV piece, but it does allow you to access video content in other ways.
All right. Well, we are talking with the Economic Development Commissioner for the state of Maine, Heather Johnson. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your ideas for helping the economy, helping the communities in the state of Maine. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Keep it brief, please. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Forestry Foundation, celebrating 75 years of conserving forests for future generations. Learn more at newenglandforestry.org. Sweet Dreams in Brunswick, a Maine family business dedicated to creating beautiful home spaces with American-made home furnishings. SweetDreamsFurniture.com. And St. Lawrence Arts, where you can see it, hear it, and experience it live on Portland's Munjoy Hill. StLawrenceArts.org.
You probably already know why public radio fundraisers are so very important, so let's skip that right now. Hi, this is Jennifer Mitchell, host of Weekend Edition. Let's Grow Together. Our summer fundraiser starts Tuesday, August 6th, and it ends just as soon as the goals are met to make sure that what you value about Maine Public Radio is able to keep going in the months ahead. It's simple. Please do your part and help us move closer to those goals before the on-air campaign even starts by pledging online right now at mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of Bay Chamber Concerts 2019 Screen Door Festival, August 14th through 18th in Camden and Rockport. The Screen Door Festival features performances by world-renowned musicians presented in intimate venues, all in a relaxed summer in Maine atmosphere. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off festival concert tickets. For complete details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking with Commissioner Heather Johnson, who leads Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet@mainecalling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. You know, Commissioner, we've spent a lot of time talking about businesses and how to help businesses, but you're the Department of Economic and Community Development. How does the community part come into play? How does DECD support communities?
You know, I think that's a great question. We see communities in the driver's seat, right? We are there to support kind of their goals and their visions. Communities know better than anyone else what their assets are, what the residents of their community want to do, and where their biggest challenges are. And so one of the roles we have is to go to meet with communities and really understand that and learn kind of what they're seeing going well and how do we help amplify that. And then where are some of their challenges? You know, some of our rural communities are looking at healthcare challenges and schools with declining populations. As a state, we actually have an in-migration, so our population is up a little bit. But in some of our rural communities, we're seeing some challenges there around number of people to keep schools and hospitals open. And so one of the things that we like to do is go in and figure out where do we see opportunity for these communities? How do we bring a collaborative network together to support them and some of their challenges? And you know, one of the really fun things about this role that I have is this administration is really focused on this collaborative look at work. So we're trying not to fix just one tiny problem somewhere, but to look at things more holistically and work together and bring solutions that are much more comprehensive. And it's a lot of fun to be able to work with communities and bring resources to communities and support that isn't just about kind of economic and community development, but if it's an agricultural community, you know, the Department of Agriculture has been great about being a good partner and working very closely with communities as well, or you know, you name it, as far as the administration goes. I think that collaboration has been something that's been incredibly helpful so far.
I know you've only been on the job a few months, but can you name some examples of some communities that this collaborative effort has sort of been underway and you're excited about?
Yeah, you're right. It's a little bit early because it took us, you know, a little bit of time to get out into the community and with this approach. A group of us were in Millinocket last week looking at some of the work that's going on in the Katahdin region and really that region working together and creating their own vision And they've done that work now. And so now we're starting to plug in and figure out how and where do we help? What resources does the state have? And how do we convene the private sector and the public sector to support the work? And that's just one example. That's a really interesting and dynamic example of how does that community, who had an incredibly difficult period of time after the mills closed, how do they look at revisioning themselves? How do they think about, you know, outdoor recreation as an opportunity? How do they look at renewable energy as an example, as a path forward for them? And then what can we do to be helpful?
We have a Facebook comment from Bridget. The tendency of some progressive communities is to see economic development as the de facto enemy of the environment and sustainability. I encourage Mainers to do due diligence when faced with anti-corporate sentiment and activism that seems sensible. Here in Belfast, resistance to a new aquaculture project is so volatile, it's given our community a bad reputation in spite of efforts to correct widespread misinformation. Do you have examples of communities that overcame situations like this and took advantage of opportunities for smart growth?
You know, I think we, one of the great things about our state is people are very involved, right? They're involved in their communities and they're involved in the state and they are very passionate about the work they do. So finding that kind of balance between the science and people's interests in existing assets, you know, the governor's very focused on climate change and our ability to successfully kind of create the economic growth without changing the quality of life. And so we continually look for that balance. And as I talk to businesses, what they say is set the standard really high. We'll be well over what you want us to do. Just make the process clear and definable and easy to understand so that it's predictable and we know what's coming. So that's one of the things that, you know, we kind of work on in partnership with the regulatory bodies of the state. It's a lot less about what's the standard because everybody wants that standard to be high, right? We need clean water. We need clean air. Those are part of our value propositions as a state. We just need to make that path clear for businesses.
A Facebook comment from Jeremy, enough of this low pay economy, manufacturing must return.
You know, I think manufacturing has evolved so much over the last 10 or 15 years that there is a real focus in manufacturing and particularly additive manufacturing, composite manufacturing, things like that. We think there's a way to combine manufacturing with kind of carbon responsible footprints. And so we agree. And as is the University of Maine, by the way, who has put in this public-private partnership with the additive metal group so that over 250 students each year will get private sector experience before they graduate. And the Composites Lab is doing a lot of the same work. So we totally agree.
All right. We'll go to, let's see here. Brian, this is an email. What are the potential economic impacts to Maine by expanding the availability of affordable, reliable, high-speed internet? What kind of difference can and will it make? It seems like kind of an obvious question, but characterize the importance of this.
We like the easy ones, Brian. Thank you. You know, I think internet is, we live in a global economy. And if you can't access that global marketplace, you significantly stagnate your opportunities. If you think about, you know, there was a point in time where you could only sell something to somebody within a 40-mile radius and the intellectual property didn't flow freely because you were very confined to your own marketplace. Now, right, that work happens everywhere. Additionally, people can live anywhere. And so I think we're seeing a shift, as Marfim mentioned earlier, we're seeing a shift of people being able to work where they live. So you choose where you want to live and the lifestyle that you want to have and then work there, as opposed to having to live wherever the work is. And Maine is particularly well positioned for that. But the connectivity really allows for all of that. It also allows for us to engage and be creators in the economy as well, instead of just consumers. You know, I think that's the risk when you don't have high-speed access. A lot of times you can consume the economy, but you can't create it. And that's one of the challenges.
An email from Jackie. I'm in my 70s and live in Washington County. My friends and I all hope to be able to remain at home as our health deteriorates. Is any thought being given to developing a workforce in rural communities that can help the elderly remain at home? We know we may all eventually need part or full-time caregivers, but we will also need help maintaining our homes, getting to doctor appointments, getting groceries, etc. Any ideas?
Jackie, I think it's a great question and something that we stay very focused on. You know, I think there is a blend of kind of technology solutions with very human touch components to it, right? Technology can solve some of these challenges and create opportunities that allow people to stay in their home much longer. But one of the great things about our rural communities is the strength of them and the strength and interest that people have in wanting to support others in their community. I was in a community recently where they had put together a group of high school students and contractors that it had a list of seniors and homes that needed repair, and they were out trying to fix them. You know, there was a big discussion at a town meeting apparently about why so many homes were in disrepair, and the feedback was people, you know, couldn't do the manual part of the work anymore. And so they figured out how to kind of rally their own folks to solve that challenge. And those are the great stories, right, that the strength of rural economies create.
Do you remember what town that was?
I don't, but I can get it to you.
Oh,
I was
great.
Afraid of that.
We have an email from John. We need help with distribution in the farming sector. Many people want to farm, and there is a need and a demand for healthy local food. Because of the lack of infrastructure for small farmers, farming is a brutal way to make a living in Maine. And I want to just say, John, that we have done Maine Calling programs on farming in Maine, and this issue comes up over and over again.
Yeah, I think this is a great point. You know, we hear this a lot from businesses, and this agricultural movement is an important one as it relates to the economy. People want to know where their food is grown. They want it to be grown locally by people that they know, and they want to be as close to the source as possible. And I, you know, you see that continuing in level of importance. I believe Commissioner Beal is actually going to be on the show
next week,
and so maybe that's a great question for her as well. She and I work together on a lot of options, and this may be one that she and I can take up together.
All right. A Facebook message from Jonathan. What is DECD doing to help support communities accept the changes needed to support investment? Not all communities are business friendly, even if they have a lot of potential for development. So I think Jonathan has kind of a mindset question.
You know, it's an interesting discussion that we have. One of the things we want to do is support communities and their goals. There are communities that do want investment. There are communities that are, you know, kind of rolling out the red carpet. So I think we want to make sure that that's a really balanced discussion with communities. What we found is there are communities that want kind of any investment. Some communities, though, are a little bit more focused on particular types of investment. We have communities maybe that have traditionally been forest products communities, and their economy has been based on the forest products sector. It's much easier for them to look at investments from the forest products community, even if it's a different type of investment, than a totally new sector. And so, you know, as we work with communities, we try to figure that out. The other thing we try to do is bring in information, because a lot of times people are nervous about what they perceive happening. And there's a lot of work going on all over the world that we can bring into communities so they can see what does it really mean to do whatever investment is being discussed, and is that something they're open to or not.
We're having this conversation in Portland where a new crane has gone in, more and more Maine products being shipped abroad. What do you see as the role of, whether it's Eastport or Portland, the role of shipping internationally in community development?
You know, I think one of the best ways to grow your economy is to create an export marketplace, right? So to the extent that we can create products that have export markets, we certainly want to do that.
We'll go to Beatty, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Beatty. Go ahead.
Hi. I heard a sort of desire to help people, older people, stay in their homes in rural areas, but I think rural areas need a sort of public transit system anyway. We need a a bus along Route 1 all the way, and that would have to be subsidized too. But in the rural, if you had what I've been calling a jitney service, where people with cars who can drive and were vetted and certified and insured by the state could establish routes, and they'd be picking people up along and maybe, you know, grabbing some groceries at some point. I think the postal system used to do things like that. And it would provide jobs for people who have cars and still drive, and it would really help the people who don't.
Yeah, thank you for that suggestion. We can certainly try to look at that a little bit more closely as we think about transportation and its role in community development.
Beattie, thanks for your call. We're almost out of time. So, Commissioner, I want to give you a minute and a half or so to say, you know, 4 years from now, when you're looking back at this first term, what would you like to be able to say about the economy and the communities of Maine that maybe we're not able to say right now?
You know, I think as we look at our metrics and as I look at kind of success factors for me, this wage growth is really important. It doesn't happen overnight, but it needs to kind of, we need to show progress there. I think we also have a few opportunities that are kind of right in front of us in rural communities, and we need to execute those really effectively. We need to support the execution of those really effectively so that there's a model that then people can see and use to leverage. And to Betsy's comment earlier, this framework for entrepreneurs and how do we create an environment where they can thrive and they want to thrive? How do we talk to, you know, high school students about workforce and entrepreneurship and those types of things? How do we create that environment where they'll create their own success? We've just created the environment, and that's the goal.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You've been listening to the Commissioner of Maine's Department of Economic and Community Development, Heather Johnson, and we'll be sure and put a link on our website to the plan that's being developed by your department for the state of Maine. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Ella Boyd, our intern, took your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.